You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 16th of January. What? Nobody got better? Oh no, the impact is real. A deep dive on Tobias Harris, because I know that's what you want. And a wild NBA night. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, hopefully some geeky numbers you like, while fulfilling a 25, 30-minute gap of your day that makes you, I don't know, smile, laugh, get a little information, be a better Jazz fan, let you be a true fan, all that kind of stuff. You can tell your smart speaker that you just got for the holidays, because seemingly everyone did, to play podcast Locked On Jazz. You can also tell to play Locked On NBA. Ben Golliver coming tomorrow. Fun show today with our regular Wednesday crew of John Corrales and Jake Madison. We're in L.A. Programming note. I think I'll have no problem tomorrow morning, and Friday's going to be a little funky. My wife has a significant birthday coming up here. Okay, I was like not going to say that it was her 50th birthday, because then I had to concede that I was like close to 50. But since some of you have been listening to me do sports talk radio since 1992, which was, I don't know, like 27 years ago, you're probably aware of the fact that I'm close to 50 at this point, and I have a 16-year-old child and a 13-year-old child. So who am I lying to that I somehow was not going to mention that my wife was turning 50, because then you'd know I was almost 50. Whoa, what a deep revelation of my insecurities of aging right here on the podcast for all of you to see in its rawness. So yes, my wife is turning 50, which is totally, I don't swear on this podcast, but this would be the time where I could drop the F-bomb and you could not get mad at me, because it would be appropriate, because it's beeping unbelievable that we're 50. Holy. So anyway, some of you are listening to this right now and you think 50 is like dirt. It's so old. You don't have parents that are 50. Oh, God, what is happening in my life? This is evidently a therapy session of a podcast, not a basketball podcast today. Holy smokes. So anyway, we have been blessed in our lives with some really great friends, some new, some old, some silver, some gold. And my wife grew up here, so she's flying out today. She's going to spend dinner with her family, who are just the greatest people, tonight, and then she and I are going to stay in town, and our best, close couple friends from Seattle are flying in, and her best friends for life, who and her husband, who live here in L.A., and where the six of us are going to dinner at a fancy-dancy restaurant. And so I am flying back Friday morning, and so I don't quite know when Friday's podcast is going to happen, but I'm guessing we might just do a live midday show, unless there's a lot of powder, and then who knows, because then I have to prove that I'm not really 50 and I can ski. All right, enough of that. Maybe I just didn't want to address this. That injury report came out yesterday, and I'm not going to lie, I was right there with you. Like, oh my gosh, everybody's being reevaluated in a week, and Dante in two. So when the litany of injuries happened, you kind of looked at the schedule and said, all right, I think finally breaking, we can get through this next stretch. Detroit, Chicago, I don't know about that Clipper game, but we can get through Cleveland, and then you can start to get guys back. Well, that's not happening. And that is, those injury reports are not, will be like activated in a week or in two, will be reevaluated. Now, maybe reevaluated is ready to go, but that seems unlikely. This is a bummer. This is a total disappointment. I'm not going to like, and not like these guys are disappointing us, or that these guys aren't doing their job, or that these guys, you know, are somehow malingering or any, not, no, no. Like, we love you. We want you on the court. We want to watch you play. This is a bummer. And, you know, frankly, for either Rubio or Exum just to get ready. You know, if Dante gets ready, then we get to see when he's back, you know, what he's capable of and see if he can keep building off what he did. And same thing with Ricky, and see if he can keep going. And instead, we now play a six of our next seven against Western Conference playoff foes without you know, about 60 minutes of our rotation, right? Rubio 30, Dante 20, Cephalosha 10. So you're missing 25% of your rotation. We've survived it against Orlando and the LeBron-less Lakers and the Bulls and the Pistons, but I don't know that you can get by that against the Clippers, the Blazers, the Nuggets, two games against the Timberwolves, and the Blazers. And that's where 2 weeks from now for Dante Exum is reevaluated on January 30th. That's the end of this huge stretch of games here. And I don't really know what's realistic in six of our next seven games. Six of them are teams similar to us. We believe we're a little bit better than, but only a little bit, right? Like, this is the whole part where I think we kind of missed the boat this year in self-evaluating the Jazz. I think we're better than the Clippers. I think we're better than the Blazers. I don't know anymore if we're better than the Nuggets. We might be, you know, if the schedules were even. But not by a lot. Like, by the slimmest of margins. But maybe better. So that when suddenly you're tired and they're not, or you're schedule fatigued and they're not, or your schedule confidence has been blown and they're not, or now you're injured and they're not. Now, in some of these cases, they may be injured too. Or what I think is going to happen here is the burden that is being placed on everyone to play 35 minutes a night, or when Jay Crowder goes into a shooting slump. Let me reveal a little secret here. Like, when you're shooting the ball way Jay Crowder is right now, you don't hate it when you get taken out of the game. Like, it lets you settle yourself. You're 1 for 11 becomes a 1 for 7 or 1 for 6, and you go on and feel a little bit better. But right now, Jay Crowder's not shooting well, and Jay Crowder's got to keep shooting for the well-being of the team. And Jay Crowder is, like, forced to be out there for 32 minutes a night, bombing away at 1 of 11 while his shot has to just feel wild right now. So this is big and a total bummer. And the Dante 2 weeks is, it's already been a week. He didn't kid around when he sprained that ankle. And we're going to be particularly cautious on Dante because last time he sprained an ankle, he shortly thereafter tore an ACL. Right, same leg. Now, were they related? Probably not, but, you know, there's no way you're not thinking about that in some capacity. Maybe not. Maybe medically that's just a stupid thought, but it seems like human nature would be like, okay, let's just make sure. So anyway, that's a bummer, and that injury news was not great, and we are riding our guys right now, and the schedule is about to get hard. Playing the Clippers tonight, they're good. They're really good. They're not defending at all recently, is the saving grace on the Clippers. They're 8th in the league offensively. They're 22nd in the league defensively, and they've generally, for whatever reason, stopped defending. In the last 10 games, their defensive rating, by the way, the Lakers caught us in defensive rating over the last 10 games. They're now a 102.7, as are we. The Clippers, over the last 10 games, defensively, where did you go, sir, Clippers? The Nuggets, by the way, last 10 games after getting beat up by the Warriors last night, are now 29th in the league defensively. Do they eliminate the Clippers from the league here? Why can I not? The LA Clippers are 15th defensively. So they're not terrible. They must have gotten a little better in some of their last stretches. if you kind of run the last, I was running December 1st recently, largely because we're very good, or December 12th is my magic number of when we've been so great. And you run December 12th to January 15th, which, and now all of a sudden, the Clippers slip a little bit. So they've regained some of it. In that stretch, by the way, we're in 99.7, Milwaukee's 102.9 at second. And the Clippers come in 27th in the league defensively over the last 16 games. So they've gotten tighter and better in the last 10. So they're good. Montrezl Harrell's playing hard. Tobias Harris, Danilo Gallinari, Lou Williams. They've got guys. Don't take a lot of threes, but they're the number 2 three-point shooting team in the league. They go to the line more than any team in the league. They don't force turnovers at all. We have a tendency to turn it over a little bit, not as much as we used to, so it's kind of a minimal issue. We're down last 10 games. We're at 17th. We've been there for a while. It's kind of a non-issue now. And not surprising, by the way. We've got a bunch of guys hurt. We're not passing as much. We're playing a lot more just high pick and roll. We don't turn it over as much. Like, it's your system leads to your – like, the Rockets shouldn't turn it over other than Harden turns it over because they just play isolation. They don't pass. That's why I'm not – that's why turnovers is always something that gets a lot of TV time, and I never understand why it gets TV time. I think it's because it's on the box score and it's there, and so we talk about it. It's just a bad stat. Just it really perturbs me. Such a difference between a live turnover and a dead ball turnover. There's such a difference between Joe Ingles throwing a pass above the break that gets intercepted the other way for a dunk and Donovan Mitchell throwing a lob to Rudy Gobert that goes off his hands as basically a missed shot. They're so different than Royce O'Neal stepping out of bounds or Royce O'Neal even dribbling off his foot out of bounds in some absurd play that actually goes out of bounds as a dead ball. It's really actually not that big a deal. Hopefully you guys have heard me pontificate, elaborate, complain about this enough that you're with me on this. Today's show is brought to you by The Store, 6200 South 20th East. The Mud Slide Cookie. It's become a phenomenon, and the best part is it never lets anyone down. The only people that are ever let down by the Mud Slide Cookie are those people that just are not huge chocoholics. If you're not a huge chocoholic, it's going to be too much because the outside is the perfect crisp and the inside's like a fudge and it's just incredible. And, you know, it has created a phenomenon where people are going across the town to see it, taking their days off here so that they can go get them. And it's worth it every single time. 6200 South, 20 of these, but they have a lot more than cookies. It's just a wonderful place. It makes me happy when I go to the store. They've got that community feeling to them, whether it's the product that Jeff and Scott have put in, where they bring the June pies from Heber or the tortilla chips from the woman they met at the wedding who makes these great tortilla chips and now she makes them for them, or whether it's the cotton candy people that are a local company, or the cheese, the world-renowned cheese, which has a little section in it for Utah cheese as well. So you have the Utah cheese right next to the world's best cheese. It's just a great vibe. And then you've got the high school kids helping the older folks, probably me at 50, you know, carrying their bags out to their car and all of those types of things. It's just a wonderful feel. 6200 South, 20th East. Stop by the store and give me your report on what you think of the Mud Slide Cookie. Today's show is also brought to you by Shamrock Auto. These are just good people. This is one of the great pleasures of doing this show and getting to know Jeff and Scott over at the store and Rob Taylor over the Shamrock Auto. I just get to meet really good local business people. And Rob's one of those. Shamrock Auto Group started because Rob didn't like the car buying experience. And so Rob opened up in Pleasant Grove, Utah. He got a mechanic, long time, to become his buyer so that he could investigate all the cars, and he knew exactly what he was giving you was going to be the best of the best. And now when you go to cars.com and you look, Shamrock Auto Group has 113 reviews and 5 stars across the board. And if you go to Google reviews, it's the same thing. It's really an incredible tribute to what he and Brady Kimball and all the guys at Shamrock Auto have done to create this. They're predominantly nearly new cars, 6,000 to 13,000 miles. I like to call it the Utah County Assault Vehicles as the predominant, but he can go get changed sedan. And there's people from out of state who tell Rob what they want. He goes and finds it for them and brings it for them. It's a great experience. You'll feel the love. You'll feel the Utah. It's Rob Taylor. Hopefully everybody laughs at that if you've been around the show long enough when I used to call him Rob Thomas. Over at Pleasant Grove, tell him that you came with Locked On Jazz, and he will discount you well, take care of you, and also I've got some nice little deals for you as well. He got mad at me when I said he thought that the Jazz were going to win the title. He never totally said that. That's not entirely true. I have to be honest. But it was fun to try to claim that he said that. Free lifetime 7-day cooler, which is comparable to Yeti. It's a Utah company. You can call Rob personally. He gives me his cell phone and says, yeah, just have him call me. Like, that's exactly who he is. 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. All right, I'm going to do this for you today, because I think you, Jazz fan, looks coming up at free agency and says to yourself, who can we get? We have money. It's time. And it probably is time, right? We play, and the area where it's time is probably most likely at the four. Our starting lineup plays the fewest minutes together of any starting lineup in the NBA. Okay, I think it's become clear. And right now, recently, when we have Favors and Gobert on the floor, we're not great. When we have either of them on the floor by themselves, we are great. Okay, I think it's become somewhat clear that however we're going to do it, we need to probably take our offense, stretch it out. And the free agent list is, I think, being overblown. The 2019 NBA free agents are incredible. They're Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. And then it drops off really fast. So, like, if you look at it from our standpoint, and everyone's like, well, if we don't get our main, we're going to get somebody great. Like, it's just this, okay, I don't know that that's true. We're not getting Durant. We're not getting Kawhi Leonard. We're not getting Kyrie Irving. We're not getting Jimmy Butler. We're not getting Klay Thompson. I agree, that's five incredible players. The next on the list I don't want is DeMarcus Cousins. The next on the list is Al Horford. I'm not interested. The next on the list is probably Kemba Walker. Okay, like maybe, but he probably takes the money and stays in Charlotte. And I'm not sure how Kemba and Donovan work together. But okay, like, let's put it on the list. So to some extent, our first guy is somewhere in the mix of Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Tobias Harris. And then after that, it's DeAndre Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus. I'm not interested. Goran Dragic, Harrison Barnes, maybe. Harrison Barnes would be interesting. I have to figure out what he can actually do. He's been miscast both times in his two jobs in his career. So it's interesting because I don't really think we're in play for the top guys, and I don't think we actually have that many options in the middle, that search gets interesting. So Tobias Harris is probably target number one. And, you know, if you listen to the Clippers, Locked On Clippers today, like, they're definitive he's not a max player. Well, guess what, guys? If he comes to the Utah Jazz, it's going to be under a max contract. There is almost no way that you can do anything but sign him to a $145 million max contract to get him done. He turned down an $80 million deal to become a free agent, and he's having an unbelievable year. So it's a deal that I think, frankly, in the vacuum of deals, is a bad deal. Like, if you just gave me, would you pay Tobias Harris $145 million or whatever it is? My answer is no, that's too much money. But if you put it in the vacuum of the NBA and we want to go get this guy and we want to compete and you've got two stars in Rudy and Donovan who are perfect complements to who he is as a player and it's going to cost me $145 million, then I think the answer is yes. Now, let's dig in whether or not Tobias Harris is really all of that. Let's start with cleaning the glass. So he's a big-time usage guy, 87th percentile of usage. That's good, actually. We need that. We need another usage guy. Points per shot attempt, he is having by far his best year of his career to a point where I would call it an outlier. So he has been point per shot attempt kind of a 109, 111, 110. He had 1 year, was up at 115, 140. And then this year, he's 124. Okay, that's total point score per 100 shot attempts, going from 114, 115, 113 for the last four years to 124. Either means he's gotten way better at 26, which is possible. He's only 26, or he's having an outlier year. Fine. Even the previous one is good, but that's where paying a max contract gets a little nerve-wracking. His assist percentage is in the upper half of players and always has been, so he's a good passer. Watching him, these are just numbers, watching him against New Orleans, a good ball handler, can handle and conduct from the four, can play the four, and he doesn't turn it over a lot. You looking for any trends about his shooting, he has shot more threes. He's really become a stretch. He's taking 44% of his shots as threes this year, which is considerably up from the years past and might be why his effective field goal percentage is now 58% and way better. So every indicator here is yes. Shot frequency. He doesn't go to the rim a huge amount for kind of a forward player. He's on the bottom half of guys. He's not going to be around the rim. And he does shoot a pretty high level amount of mid-range shots. So he still actually has room to take more threes. Like he's taking, I don't know what I said earlier. I think it was wrong. His overall three-point shooting percentage is 44.5%, which is the highest of his career. He only takes 27% of his shots as threes. That could actually increase. He takes 42% of his shots as mid-range shots. So he's incredibly efficient without the greatest shot distribution right now. His above-the-break three-point shooting is elite this year. It was really good last year, too, that he seems to have added to his team, and it's bona fide. He's been over 40% on above-the-break three-point shot shooting for the last 2 years. He's been over 40% overall for the last 2 years. His mid-range shooting is really good. The guy can stroke it. His rim finishing is average. His foul drawing is average. So he's probably, from what that is you're adding a bona fide, we'll dig a little bit more because I know you want to, I know this is what you really want. So you've got a great shooter who can handle at the four, play the three or the four versatile, not a point go getter. And we'll dig into that in a second. In fact, Locked On Clippers is complaining, it's probably not the right word, that he's not a very good fourth quarter player. Some of that is that Lou Williams becomes their fourth quarter player, and so he doesn't get the opportunities, but it's also worth noting Lou Williams becomes their fourth quarter player, right? Like he's, when it's time, the Clippers go to Lou Williams. Lou Williams is really special, but if you're playing max money, you'd like your guy to be really special. He is stunningly good as the pick-and-roll ball handler. This is the thing about him that makes him the best fit and why he, frankly, should want to come to Utah. He's in the 88th percentile offensively of all pick-and-roll ball handlers. He's in the 94th percentile of all spot-up shooters. That's what we do. He's not great in transition. We, frankly, don't do that. That's a sign of athleticism. He's only okay in isolation. That's a sign of that. He posts up a little bit. And decently, according to the numbers, which is interesting because of the fact that in the switching game, maybe he would get littles on him. Little Donovan, Mitchell, Tobias Harris, pick and roll at the top, flip it out, and if they're switching it, you send Tobias down to the post. I really like the Tobias Harris, Rudy Gobert pick and roll, and we find out whether he can pass lobs. But there's not a lot here you don't like. He's having an unbelievable year. His interesting find was his catch and shoot unguarded is not very good. It's much better guarded. Pretty good shooter off the bounce, which is an important attribute. Preferably on isolation, which he doesn't do great. He drives left better than he drives right. We can watch that tonight. And you'll see this tonight. You'll see tonight a really, really good basketball player with a lot of different skills who probably is not well enough. It was just he's not a cat. The top tier guys, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, those type of players can just go get you a bucket. And he's probably not that guy. You know, and so Donovan would probably have to be that guy. Locked On Clippers complains that he fades in fourth quarters. The numbers don't show it. He's shooting 55% in the fourth quarter and 52% from three and 91% from the line. He has come off. He is a 50-40-88 guy right now. It's incredible how efficient he is. In clutch circumstances this year, he's 12 of 22 at 55% from the field. So this is maybe a great example of where you start to, you know, feel something as I listen to Locked On Clippers today, and the numbers don't back it up. I mean, the other night they did. He was 0 for 2 in the fourth quarter, and they feel as though there's been a continual feeling recently that in fourth quarters he fades a little bit. His clutch numbers, though, in the last 2 years in L.A. have been good. They were not good when he was in Orlando and Detroit late in games trying to close games. Maybe that's because in Orlando and Detroit, he was the man, not able to play off other people. And in L.A., Danilo Gallinari this year, Lou Williams, he's playing off of them, which he would do in Utah. He's pretty perfect for who we are. The only thing that's not perfect is how much money you have to pay him. But otherwise, frankly, he's pretty perfect. Like, I can try to dig through. He's not a great defense player, but that's why we have Rudy. And frankly, we're pretty perfect for him. I would add, we're pretty perfect for him. The only way you do this, and the only way you can get this done, and other teams will do the same, and so you have to hope he likes this better than Brooklyn or some other place, is that you're knocking on his door at midnight of July 1, and you're offering him the complete max deal, while the Clippers are saying to him, hey, we love you, but we're going to go investigate Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant. We're going to go look at that. And then you also have to see if he really wants to, if they're bringing Kawhi Leonard, does he want to play next to Kawhi Leonard, or does he want to play next to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell? Or does he want to live in L.A.? Because L.A. is pretty awesome. Like, come on, you're 26-year-old. 26-year-old, 27-year-old African-American millionaire. L.A. is way better than Utah. So put that into the mix. Today's show is brought to you by Homie. Do you know about Homie? Have you sold a house recently? Have you been a part of real? Do you know how real estate works? So real estate, maybe you're a first time, you don't know how real estate works. Here's what Homie is going to disrupt and is going to change. And that is the fundamentals of how real estate works. I am not making a comment here in any way, shape, or form about the realtors themselves or the work they do. The structure of the real estate business is this. That you hire a real estate agent and you pay them a commission based on the price of what your house sells. This was great when houses were like $150,000. But if your house is suddenly more than that, you're paying the same commission structure that was built a long time ago. And I have never quite understood why, if I buy the house in the right place and then I put in, like, why if I put in a $200,000 of renovations in my house and make it worth more money, am I paying my real estate agent more? Those items never have clicked to me. So that's where Homie comes in. Homie has come into this process and said, wait a sec, we're going to do it with a team of people, and we're going to do it at a set rate, and so therefore you're not paying commission based on the price of your house. You pay $199 to list, and you pay $1,299 at close. Homie's customers save over $10,000. A million-dollar house saves $60,000. If I've got it right, that probably means a $500,000 house saves $30,000. That's just equity you're getting back. Call 801-899-0072. Have them explain more. Ask the questions. So how do you list it? They'll tell you. How do I make sure I get taken care of? Do I have one agent? How does it work? What about listing? Ask all the questions and see if you think you get your value as they change the way it's done. And then ask yourself whether you want the other system, whereas if your house sells for more and you've done all the work in your house and you make your yard nicer, why is the agent making more money? 801-899-0072. 801-899-0072. It's Homie. Find out more. Wild night in the NBA. The craziest story is a story out of Houston. This is funny. I went out for dinner with some of the coaches last night, and I was laughing that I was so excited to see them because this deal went down in Houston, and it's the kind of deal that I don't really think anybody ever really fully understands. And so then you're sitting there like, well, does anybody understand this deal? Like, and I want to talk about it. So let me see if I can walk through this because now you guys are the people. So when you have a guy in a G League contract, there's a certain amount of days on the G League two-way contract you're about to spend in the NBA. Once you've crossed over that amount of days in the NBA, then you have to either go back to the G League or you have to be given a full NBA contract. It's a way that you can't suddenly just sign someone to G League and then have them play all year in the NBA and not pay them. Well, the Houston Rockets reached that point with Daniel House, who has started the last 20 games for them, shooting like 50% from the three and been really good. And they offered him a not very good contract. And his agent's reaction is, well, wait a sec. There's only 40 games left in the season. We've proven who we are. Rather than signing a three-year non-guaranteed deal, we will go sit in the G League for the rest of the year and become a free agent at the end of the year and get a real contract. It's absolutely right on the agent's part. Houston is financially strapped, both in ownership and luxury tax. And so Houston didn't make a better offer. So now all of a sudden, Houston has lost their starting small forward for the last period of time with all their injuries, but he's still been good, in Daniel House, because they don't want to pay him. And so Daniel House, I believe it was Texas A&M, rookie, is going to go to the G League for the rest of the year and then next be a free agent in the offseason and hopefully get himself a real deal. There's obviously a risk there when decides he's just playing off Harden and he's not really that good, but he's shot 50% from three recently and he's contributing. He's playing 30 minutes a night and the Rockets let him go. It's incredible. It's just another blow to what seems to be the Rockets. Otherwise, last night was a good night for us. Minnesota got crushed by Philadelphia. Crushed. They allowed 83 first half points. The 76ers won 149-107. The 76ers averaged 1.4 points per possession. Wild. Crushed them. Andrew Wiggins was 4 of 14 after having like this unbelievable night the other night, and you wondered, like, could it come back, and they didn't have it. Oklahoma City lost to Atlanta, who just exposed OKC's brilliant defense. Exposed it. Scored 142 points, 68 points in the paint. Just got them shifting and driving. They scored 1.3 points per possession. Oklahoma City actually had a good offense tonight. John Collins was brilliant again, 12 of 14. Kevin Huerter, the rookie, had 17. Trey Young had 11 assists. Like, there's a lot of things going on in Atlanta that are exciting. They're pretty good recently. They can get you. They can get us when we go there. But that's a pretty good night for the Jazz when the Rockets lose a starter. Oklahoma City loses to Atlanta. Minnesota gets blown out as well. And then Denver got waxed by the Warriors. The Warriors put on a Warrior performance last night with 51 in the first quarter. And they went and averaged over 1.3 points per possession last night. I think even higher. And close to 1.4 for most of the night. Finished at 1.47. Wow. 1.5 points every time they crossed half court. That'll throttle Denver's defensive ratings here for a while. And it's a little misleading. But that was an eye-opener one. I think Denver saw that as a night for them to show that they belonged, and they allowed 51 points in the first quarter at home. I don't know how we survive these injuries that we have, and I don't know how our guys don't wear down. And I do, you know, it's an interesting time to watch Donovan play point guard. But I will tell you that I think Golden State is way better than everyone else, and I don't think we're any different than when we started the season. We thought the Jazz could be the number two seed simply because everybody else was going to kind of fall in line. I actually don't think we can be the two seed anymore because Denver's 29-14, and that would probably be too hard to catch. But Denver's second half of their season is brutal. And Denver's done a great job. But the rest of them, I don't know how we survive these. You know, what happens in the next seven games will probably tell. If we somehow can go 5-2, which is just would be incredible without all these guys, then I think we're walking toward possibly being a third seed. It's just at 51 wins, like not like we're going to go win 55 all of a sudden, like 51, like 50. That's how tight this all is. Have a great day. Thanks very much for tuning in to Locked On Jazz. And I'll try to get something out to you tomorrow in reaction. Ben Golliver and I are taping Locked On NBA right after the show. So, or right after the game. So that'll be up tomorrow morning. Have a great one. See you.